A union bid for 10 days of paid domestic leave has been rejected by the Fair Work Commission. The commission does not deem it necessary to provide the family and domestic leave to all employees covered by modern awards. Feminist insider Claire Tatizo from the YWCA joins us now to have a chat about this and other feminist news. How's it going, Claire?
Pretty good, thanks, Jenny. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, great to have you in. And tell us about this leave and why it may have been rejected.
So they have obviously rejected the proposal to have paid DV leave in all modern workplace agreements. The push comes from the ACTU, who've really been campaigning on this issue since around 2014, so that workplaces could offer some leave, some paid leave, in order to support employees who are experiencing violence. And we have seen over the last few years an increased attention to workplaces. I guess to encouraging workplaces to respond to the issue of domestic violence and seeing that it's a responsibility of theirs as well. And this is one of the key actions in the third phase of the National Plan to Reduce Violence Against Women, which is around supporting workplaces to respond to domestic violence more effectively. So there is a focus on it. And this is because we know that, you know, women experiencing violence are at risk of losing income or even their jobs because of the impact of their violence that they experience, but also just for practical reasons, like the need to take time off of work to deal with, you know, attending court appointments or accessing support services. It is encouraging. We are seeing workplaces voluntarily put in place more domestic violence leave policies or strategies. About 40% of organisations that actually report to the Workplace Gender Equality Agency do have a domestic violence policy or strategy.
Oh, wow, that's quite significant.
It is. And according to current statistics that we have, paid leave does cover around or just over 2 million employees across Australia. And South Australia, all South Australian public sector employees actually do have access to paid DV leave. But as you said, the Fair Work Commission rejected this call to be mandated or to have it as a minimum standard. However, they have said that workplaces can't stay silent on this issue, that it is necessary for workplaces to make provisions for domestic violence leave. So that would include unpaid DV leave, also allowing for personal leave or sick leave to be taken when necessary. So there is certainly an acknowledgement that DV leave has positive benefits and that at a minimum workplaces should consider implementing some sort of strategy or policy that does respond to this issue. So I believe, you know, that the Labor government said that, you know, it's not as far as we would like to see, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. I think that's
yeah.
really accurate.
And I imagine that would cover men and women and
Absolutely.
Those who don't identify in either.
That's right. Yeah. All genders, although we do know that women, I think from studies they've shown that it's about over 90% of women who are accessing this leave currently. And also just, you know, that they have done a study. They did a 2014 survey of workplaces who had paid DV leave, and they showed quite positive results in terms of the employers' perspectives, who reported, you know, positive outcomes with raised workplace morale, employees feeling safe and supported, and, you know, don't feel like they're going to lose their jobs. So I think there's a bit of apprehension about domestic violence leave and what it means, but it is really about, you know, one, providing that practical support for women who are experiencing and anyone who is experiencing violence, but also it's about creating that culture in the workplace that says we do not accept that this happens in our society and we want to support people who do experience it. So I think it sends a strong message.
Absolutely. Claire Tatizo from the YWCA is with us. Part of Australia's foreign aid budget for family planning has been halved. What kind of overseas services could we expect to lose funding?
That's right. So it looks like it's been halved from $46 million in 2013 and 14 to $23 million just last year. So international you know, aid groups are saying that this is concerning because it means that, you know, some of the most vulnerable people in the world will lose access to things like contraception and sexual reproductive health and rights, which is something that's, you know, hugely important. There are apparently around 214 million women and girls around the world who want contraception but have no access to it. And, you know, this relates to maternal health. It relates to other kind of health services that respond to women's needs. It relates to education and empowerment in communities. There's far-ranging consequences for not having access to contraception. And so I think, you know, human rights organisations are a little bit concerned that this might actually impact some of the most vulnerable women. And it also goes against the Gillard government's 2012 pledge to double its contribution to family planning services. So it also comes at an interesting time when earlier in the year, or late last year, President Trump expanded a policy that banned foreign aid to international healthcare providers who discussed or advocated for abortion rights. So
really?
Not even those who provided abortion, but if they talked about abortion or provided any sort of information about it, they wouldn't be funded. So it sort of represents a bit of a shrinking of access to sexual and reproductive health and rights, which is so crucial for women across the world and some of the most vulnerable women. You know, I think it's something to consider looking at. And we know that the government does do a lot of great work in the area of women's issues in terms of their aid budget, but just to make sure that it doesn't keep getting cut because the most vulnerable people will be affected by this.
Well, it sounds as though the American approach is ideological, whereas Australia is just cutting a lot of foreign aid generally.
That's right. We do have seen a shrinking of foreign aid, and certainly what Trump did was absolutely an ideological action, but it has real life impacts for people in the world. So
Claire Tatizo from the YWA is with us, YWCA. She's our feminist insider. And former ABC presenter Yasmin Abdel Majid has claimed she is the most publicly hated Muslim in Australia and has announced her move to London. This follows the controversy of her Anzac Day Facebook post, which said, "Lest we forget," and in brackets, she had Manus, Nauru, Syria, Palestine. This led to a tirade of social media abuse. She did apologise and took it down straight away, but of course that just kept on going. And she's off the air now and she's leaving our shores. Do you think the bullies won this one?
Look, it is quite sad, and in some ways I think yes. She may have left for a variety of reasons, but she did write a recent article just a few days before she left that talked about, you know, the fact that she was receiving death threats on a daily basis, and you know, has received hate mail almost every day, and the tirade of abuse against her really is disproportionate to what she actually did. And I think that's worth a conversation. I think that's worth us as a nation reflecting on our level of tolerance and inclusion and what that really means. And, you know, she summed it up, the sentiment, perfectly when she said, "What are they so afraid of? I'm just a young brown Muslim woman speaking my mind." And I think that's absolutely right. You know, but the fact that those identifiers of her, you know, there's a few elements of her identity that rub up against some people, and I think it's relates to the way that she's been treated. You know, the fact that she's a Muslim woman and a Muslim woman of colour, you know, that she's outspoken as well. And certainly, you know, there's been other Muslim women who've experienced similar levels of abuse. Mariam Varisadeh, who's a social advocate and social commentator, has also had to face high levels of Islamophobia. I just actually saw a few hours ago, half an hour ago, that there was there's posters that are being put up around Sydney that are incredibly racist and calling for Yasmin and Waleed Ali to be deported.
Oh, wow. And they're Australians?
Yeah, that's right. And they're being taken out, taken down, and the police are looking into investigating this. But just the level of hatred against of Muslims and even moderate Muslims. And that's the thing about Yasmin, is that, you know, one of the things that she faced a lot of criticism for was the fact that she said that Islam was feminist and was quite feminist. And so even progressive Muslims can't win. So I think it's more about, and she even said something like, it's not even about what I say, it's about who I am. So it is quite disappointing that she's doesn't feel safe and comfortable in this country, and doesn't feel like she belongs. And
a lot of Muslim people don't feel as though Australia is home, because they're told continually to get out.
That's exactly,
and go back
right.
home.
Yeah,
it's like even if they're born here,
then they're Australians. Yeah. So, you know, and I think also the fact that she's a woman and speaking out does come into play as well. And we certainly know that women tend to experience a lot of increased online abuse. And in fact, one study in Australia showed that nearly half of women who had been surveyed experienced online abuse, and the rate was 76% for women under 30. So it's certainly something that women do have to face. But when you add the layers of of race and religion, it really becomes quite disturbing. And I think it does speak to the intersections of patriarchy and misogyny and racism and Islamophobia and how that really impacts people who are just trying to live in our country and contribute to our country. So it is disappointing, and a lot of people have said that it's sad that she feels like she has to leave. But I think it means that we need to face up to some hard truths about who we are as Australians in terms of our tolerance and that idea of free speech. And people are allowed to disagree with her, but hate and death threats are just, there's no place for that, really.
Absolutely. Well said, Claire. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me.